Welcome back to Preacher in the Hat. My name is Derek. Across from me is my brother Eric, and also across from me, my father Steve. They say a picture is worth a thousand words. I think this one raises a thousand questions.
If you're only just listening in with audio, what's the best way
to describe this? I don't even know. He's got a hat on.
It's a double build cap.
It's double build, when you're trying to think about this, you're like, what is a double build hat? It's like, exactly. Like, mm-hmm. Yes. Okay. So you usually have the bill of a hat that's like out in mm-hmm. front, covering your face, you know, shading your face in the sun. Instead, all right, visualize a hat and turn it 45 degrees sideways.
Gotcha.
Okay. Right?
At least.
Yes.
Yes. At least 45 degrees, maybe more. 60? Yeah.
60 maybe.
All right. And now add another hat on top of that.
There you go.
And rotate it the reverse number of degrees. Right.
So it's not front and back.
Yeah.
It's like northwest. Yeah. And
so while I'm wearing it, there's only one face in it. But in visualize that there could be two faces, one face under one part of the bill, one bill, and another face on another bill. And it's the idea of your head go on a swivel.
Stunningly.
Head on a swivel.
Stunningly, this has something to do with what we're going to be talking about today.
It says on the front. The hat says on the front.
I'm their leader. Which way did they go?
I am their leader. Which way did they go?
All right. So we're going to get... you're going to get the backstory behind the hat. Thank goodness, because I don't think we couldn't do that without.
We could barely do this without.
Yeah, what we're going to have to do is we're going to have to put a. I did snap a photo before this.
Cool.
All right, we're going to have to put that on social media for like our Spotify or mm-hmm. people who are listening on audio. We're going to put that on.
Yeah.
So you guys can get a visual of this. That'll be up.
And I would like to let you know, this is not a new trendy cap.
It is not
this
trendy.
This is 1986 version.
All right. So before we get into the backstory of the hat, we're going to try to...
reel it in.
Yeah, we're going to try to reel it in. And I don't know. This is a... Obviously, we talk. So the hat is I'm their leader. Which way they go? We're talking about leadership today. I wanted to before we got going on that particular aspect of it. Let's talk about a couple of qualities that are maybe underrated in leadership, or maybe overlooked. I don't know if that's a good way to put it, because I think we all we know a lot of maybe obvious qualities of a leader, but what are some you think like, or maybe even that we get wrong that we don't like that's misconstrued? Like, for example, this is how I would answer that question. Okay, I feel like a good leader actually makes less decisions than you expect them to make. Right, so a really good I'm gonna talk about like specifically like a people leader, right? Mm-hmm. All right, so I think like delegation and empowering other people to do things to make decisions is really, really key. And I've been in a couple situations where I've seen the lack of that, where a leader takes everything upon themselves and doesn't trust anybody else with anything.
Yeah.
Just completely torpedo a promising situation mm-hmm. because it's like all on their shoulders and mm-hmm. you know, they're not sure what somebody else would do with that authority. So they can't let go of it.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. It
like, does. So they, if you have, you know, think of if there's something else you can think of that maybe something's overlooked or misconstrued. Because to me, I think we often envision like really great leaders just like laying down the hammer and making all the decisions. And I think that's probably not what a great people leader would do.
I think one thing about a leader is a leader is not always self-identified.
Yeah.
I think... Maxwell says it. John Maxwell says it when he's telling me stuff about leadership. He said, if you think you're a leader and you're walking somewhere and there's nobody behind you, you're not a leader. You're just taking a walk in the park.
Yeah.
So I think one thing that's kind of underrated is this idea of whether I identify myself as a leader or whether other people see me as one and therefore follow. So the definition of a leader is somebody that other people are following.
Is that kind of like that kind of points to some of the obsession I feel like with the church right now is this obsession with titles.
Yes.
Oh yeah.
It That's is. Exactly where Big I was time. Gonna go. Yeah.
Big time.
Because I know for years one of the questions you always get is what people want to know what they're supposed to call
they're
you.
They're supposed to call
right?
you. Yeah.
And a lot of times they're not talking about like, should I call you Steve or Steven? They're saying they're wanting to know what title they should throw before before your name.
Yeah. And yeah, I mean, it's a big time thing. In fact, a lot of leaders who are so self-identified, that's very important to them is because they think they have to convince themselves and other people that they're a leader. Yeah. Kind of a poor way to get started, really, I think.
And I think it's important from the other aspect of that, though, that may, you know, if a person is asking you that, that may just be their way of showing respect to the authority that they feel that you have.
I think it is.
But when you...
Yeah, some people culturally think they can't not give you a title. Some people think that they have to, or to do so would be very disrespectful. But I think the problem is because they think of it as a title instead of a function.
Yeah.
To me, there's a difference between a position, a title, and a function. I function as a leader. That's not who I am, though. That's not my identity. My identity is not leader. So if it is, then you're going to get in a situation like this hat, man. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm their leader. Which way did they go? Because they weren't following you to start with. Sometimes you just thought they were. You thought because of your title, you thought because of this, they're supposed to be following me. You look up, they're not anywhere around.
Yeah. Okay. So willing to delegate, not placing themselves in a... Or, you know, I guess not claiming a certain place. Eric, what?
I mean, that was exactly the one that I was thinking, that title culture, not being obsessed with that, I think is a big deal. And it's important. Okay, so how would I say this the right way? It shouldn't have to be important, right? Like it, but we, with the focus that we kind of are and that we have kind of put on it over, I don't know, I mean, I guess it's been a long time now, but it just, when the focus is not there in things like that, it's that's where, like, that's to me is something that's underrated. And so not even just titles, but something that may be underrated, and this may not apply in every single leadership situation, but I feel like especially maybe at least in ministry and church situations where a leader is not overly, you mentioned decision making. And so this kind of applies there too. But not only to me is like a leader maybe not making as many decisions as you think they are, but they're also not putting... They're also, it's underrated when I'm not putting my opinion into every decision that other
leaders
are making.
Very important, very important.
Because if it's most important, because I might then say, well, I'm not making the decisions they are, but if I'm inserting myself into every decision that they're making anyway.
And influencing.
Yeah, then I'm still there. I'm still hovering. I'm still like that helicopter over top of the people who are making those decisions. So I feel like that's underrated as well.
So like that great philosopher Mike Farrell says.
Shout out to Mike.
Not original with Mike Farrell, but he says it this way. A title can be an idol, and a label don't make you able.
I don't think he came up with that. I think I've heard that before.
I've heard it too. That's why I said it. But he quotes it a lot. And so I think with him, he quotes it a lot. And so... That means it's his. You know what I'm saying? If you say it three times, it's yours.
Sure. For those of you, if you don't know Mike is an old buddy of my dad's. They know each other through ways, certain ways. But if you do a Google search for him, we don't know what's going to come up, and we can't vouch for that.
That's right.
But we do love Mike.
Met him in prison.
Yeah.
Pre-Jesus. Anyhow.
Yeah.
But, you know, the idea, finally, I think of another thing that, about leadership, is don't take yourself so dadgum serious. Mm-hmm. I think it cracks me up how serious people take themselves. I mean, they act like my opinion should be interjected into every issue because I'm mm-hmm. the leader, or I can never look stupid or foolish because I'm the leader, mm-hmm. Or you should never correct me because I'm the leader, or
no challenging.
You should never challenge
like
me, or finally, you should never. You should always recognize my title and call me by that, so that you are giving me what's called proper respect.
Yeah,
and so there's this issue of demanding respect because of a title I have. And the person who actually does more effective leadership is the person who is actually leading and is unconcerned, really, about the title, mm-hmm. is unconcerned about whether you always take them seriously or not. I just, this weekend, was at a church potluck on Sunday afternoon when a gentleman I know for many years walks up to me and calls me a clown. Well, now, I've been a leader for a long time, and I've been his leader before too, and he called me a clown. And my first response was, I was offended by it. And then he said, oh, it's a Sunday. I should not call the bishop a clown. And I looked at him. I said, there are ways that that can be taken care of if you like. First thing you could do is send an offering. I said, then we could take cover.
Send an offering.
The only way that I could work through that kind of deal and not become an issue at all is because I don't take myself that seriously in that moment. And so, yeah, you could be called. Now, when he didn't say it in anger or frustration or anything like that, he just thought he was being funny. But what I'm saying is when that happens sometimes, if you do take yourself too seriously, you cannot handle that kind of stuff because it doesn't give you proper respect. So I think one thing is respect is not anything you can demand as a leader. Respect is something that's given to you as a gift.
Yeah. I do want to say, finally, before we move on to the next thing, we didn't actually set that up where you were going to be talking about not taking yourself too seriously, and he's going to be, that was not
that's true, we did. Not pre-planned.
And I was going to say, too, you know, I was talking about inserting yourself, like, into certain things, and, like, I brought that up because, like, that's something that I have a, like, when I get put into leadership positions, like if I'm in a leadership position in any kind of situation, like I have an opinion. You know, like, so I have thoughts about how, you know, all of this stuff should go. And so that's one of like my weaknesses is, you know, putting myself in here and here and here and here because I have, you know, because I have that position.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't necessarily say it's a weakness, though. I think it can become a weakness if you are inserting yourself in. Because, you know, I mean, a good leader is going to know a lot of everything about what's happening and probably will have an opinion on everything. But it's recognizing when that's actually needed and when your opinion can be a part of the solution and not just infringing upon.
Well, one thing that happens too is sometimes the problem is when I state my opinion as though it's a fact.
Yeah.
And when I teach problem solving, it's one of the things I do. And so at a leader, sometimes one of the problems is you're right. They it's okay to have an opinion. When you state it as an opinion, you communicate, this is my opinion. Mm-hmm. But when you say, well, that's the way it ought to be because it's your opinion or it's a fact or I know this is what ought to happen, that's when you get in trouble with that kind of stuff. And that's because you take yourself, your opinion too seriously. Again, let's go back to the too seriously. And once again, I know it's going to be hard to take me seriously today.
Don't worry, we haven't at all this whole time.
I'm thinking probably not. So anything I've said probably has no authority whatsoever because of the hat.
Negated completely.
Yeah.
So then let's
We need the backstory on the hat, I guess.
Need the backstory on the hat.
So also so you can take it off, because I'm sure you're dying.
Hey, I can't wait. I cannot wait to take it off, actually.
But we barely got him to like to wear it.
Yeah, when you talk about interjecting yourself.
Yeah.
Your opinion. Yeah. The host. Yeah. These two decided I would wear the hat.
We barely got him to wear the hat. So let's give him an opportunity to get out of this thing.
And our producer had something to do with it too. But
Chris is big time in
favor. So there we go. And so I went with your opinions. How about that? I'm their leader. Which way did they go? We're just proving the point here. The year is 1986. The place is Stone Mountain, Georgia, in Stone Mountain, at the park there. I'm in a gift shop. Now, 1986, what's going on in my life is I started a church in Tuscaloosa in 1984. I had said earlier on an earlier episode that you know, I can open and close a church in like 3 years. Yeah. It doesn't take me long. So we were on the tail end of those 3 years, and I was closing it. Well, frankly, we had a group of people that came together. Some came to faith, and the church was growing a little bit. We were up to maybe 40, 50 people, sometimes have 70 people that come on Sunday mornings. And then all of a sudden, they just started dropping off one after the other. I mean, it was crazy for different reasons, different situations. It was some personal issues, it was some other issues. New Christians were just gone. They found preachers that were much more, had better titles than I did, I guess, or something. A few of them did that kind of stuff. So I'm looking up, and there's nobody around. As a matter of fact, the last day in 1986, probably right after I bought this hat, when I closed the church on September of 1986, is there were 11 people in the congregation that morning. Four of them were my family, and the other seven felt sorry for me. So this cap kind of came to me in Stone Mountain Gift Shop. Your mom and I your two sisters are older than you. Y'all weren't around at that time. Of course, you weren't born yet. And so we're over there, and I came across this cap. And it was in one of those moments where you're like, I literally saw the cap and burst out laughing. I mean, I could not stop laughing. I'm thinking, that is exactly how I feel right now. I feel that I am their leader, and I'm looking around, which way did they go? What happened? What happened here? These people that were, I was their pastor, I led some of them to Christ, you know, they hung on my every word, and all of a sudden, boom, poof, it disappeared, almost like magic, evil magic, I might add. But so I see this cap, and it just says exactly what I'm feeling. So, and I bought it, didn't have much money. I bought it in there, and I've kept it all these years. And every now and then, when I get in a situation again where it feels like, poof, what happened to the people I've been leading, I bring it out for solace to remind myself, this is not the first time you've been through this. This is not the last time you're going to go through this. It happens. If you're a leader, you will figuratively or literally wear this cap. If you're a leader, in 44 years, I've learned, as sooner or later, you will wear it.
Figuratively. You don't really want to wear it, because it is as uncomfortable as it looks.
It is awful.
It is uncomfortable.
It is terribly uncomfortable.
I have to ask.
Yeah.
Is this the most public you've ever worn this hat?
Yes.
That's a great question. That's a great question.
It probably is. Probably more people was seeing me with it than have ever seen me at one time.
Is this the longest you've ever worn it?
I think so. As a matter of fact, I literally cannot remember a time I wore it in public.
Okay, so like no sermons preached with it?
I think if I brought it out, I didn't wear it.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
I think I brought it out before in a sermon, but I never wore it before.
I can't imagine why.
Yeah, I have no idea.
I will tell you that when I listen to this episode myself, I'm hoping to listen on audio only for the first half. Because I'm not sure
avoid
I'm
going
to be able. Number two, I do not want my wife to see it. My wife of 46 years, a lovely woman who loves me and has the audacity to call me handsome every
you
now
think
and then.
This is an opinion
changer? It will
changer.
Not apply here. will not apply.
It could dock him a couple of points.
I was going to say.
It could dock me a couple of points.
Undo some work.
It could undo some work. And so with that in mind, yes, it is as uncomfortable wearing it as it is living it. Or it is just as more uncomfortable living it than it is to actually wear it. It is an uncomfortable spot to be in as a leader. It's terrible. And I wonder if you gentlemen, Mr. Producer and Mr. Host and Mr. Host, if y'all would allow me, I will now take the cap off.
Free you
please
from
shoot that. It to the other side somewhere while I do it. And when I come back, I will be looking much better, I hope.
Yeah, you get rid of that. So you didn't like climb up the side. If you've ever been to Stone Mountain, it's just like this. It's a stone mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. And there's a way up the side, you know, that you can walk up the side. You didn't walk up the side with the hat?
Okay. I think I bought it on the way out, actually. Okay. And I'm quite sure I did. I bought it on the way out and brought it home to Tuscaloosa in 1986. I've had it. It mostly stays in a closet somewhere. And often I don't know where it's at. But I found it recently again, and I pulled it out. And now I might do this is add it to the hat rack right over here, Mr. Producer. It will now have a permanent place.
It should.
It will have a permanent place in the hat rack. There it is.
We may have to. We could shift
finagle it. Yeah. I'm not loving its prominence. Yeah.
But for this episode.
Episode, it stays there.
Sure.
If you don't see it in the future, it's still there, it'll but it there. May not have a place of prominence. Could we move on, gentlemen, please?
Let's do it. Absolutely. You know, one of the things that I thought of when we were just kind of discussing this beforehand, and in that, like, you know, the hat pointed to almost completely opposite directions, the first thing that came to my mind was in the letter to the Corinthians in 1 Corinthians 11:1, and the directions were, follow me as I follow Christ, right? And I can't help but wonder, like, if he was feeling that hat a little bit, you know, when he was writing those words, you know, like, in that you're going this way or this way, and like, no one is can I get somebody, you know, to go the way that I'm going, which is the way that, you know, that
well,
Jesus
he clearly,
is going.
That writer, Paul, he clearly communicated that feeling, because he would talk about, you're following other apostles. These people come in behind me. They're doing this or doing that. So yeah, that's a great insight that he felt he had that experience. So probably that hat was not available back in his day and age, but if so, he probably would have worn it.
They might not have had that gift shop. But.
Probably not. I'm trying to figure out why it's in the gift shop at Stone Mountain, Georgia. I mean, like, I guess it's because...
Oh, you're leading a hiking group.
You're leading a hiking group, I guess. That's probably where it came from, huh?
It's got to be. Yeah.
Yeah. The application goes way beyond a hiking group for me, though. So.
Clearly it has. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was the first thing that came to my mind.
That's cool.
The second thing was, I kind of, like, wanted to pose it to you as... a little bit as a question.
Yeah.
So it's sort of like a which is worse scenario.
Okay.
So if you've got a group of people or group of whatever, you know, anything that you're trying to wrangle, for this, let's say people, would you rather go with what's worse? A group of people who are scattered everywhere, just kind of floating, maybe apathetic, and just, you know, whatever, maybe have their own opinions, all that kind of stuff, mostly apathetic. Or can you work with that group of people, or would you rather work with the group of people who are a little bit more like the hat, where one group went this way and this group went that and the other group went that way and the two groups are at odds? So is it scattered everywhere with apathy, or like, you know, two tribes going at it? What is more frustrating
as a leader?
They're both miserable.
They're terrible. How do you answer that?
They are both miserable. I guess it depends a little bit on the situation as to which would be worse. I have said, you talked about apathy, which I think is an excellent thing. I think sometimes this happens with apathy. You know, after I'd pastored for quite a few years, I used to say to a few people in my life, your mom was one of them, that I began to wonder, after you lead people for a long period of time, whether familiarity leads to apathy. Mm. Now, there's a saying that says familiarity leads to contempt, but a lot of times you don't see contempt as quickly. You see, but I think you might see apathy. It's a little bit more like, oh, yeah, we've heard this before. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, well, I know what he's going to say next. Oh, yeah, I know what he's going to propose next. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, he's done this before. Oh, yeah, she's done this before. Yeah, we know. I think children get that with their parents sometimes. They think that they know them, so familiarity leads to apathy. Oh, it's just mom and dad saying that. Mm-hmm. No big deal. So familiarity leads to apathy, and that apathy is that whole thing of just kind of wandering out here. Exactly. And they're not hostile to you. They're not like saying, hey, I'm not going to follow you anymore. I almost wonder if it's easier. It's harder on the front end. It hurts more when they say, I'm going to go this way. I don't care what you say. Mm-hmm. It hurts more, but I don't know if it's any worse.
Yeah, it's almost like you're, because there is something to be said for having two groups, like, you know, like just kind of butting heads because like at least there is passion there like
that's right.
It may be misdirected, you know, whatever, all that kind of stuff, but at least there's like, okay, people care about this. You know, it's like so you do feel that
That's
the,
true.
The leader, it's really going to depend on the leadership type, or not even your leadership type, but like a personality type. Like if you purposely avoid conflict, obviously you'd much rather be around the apathetic type. I've been in a situation where disagreeing with a leader meant that they withdrew from you. And so that can be that's like really damaging.
Yeah.
As for which one is more frustrating, like from that end or from like the actual like leadership end, I mean, I kind of like identify with what you said, that at least the two groups that went the opposite direction, like have
a direction.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cause I don't know if you can, you can kind of like, maybe you can find common ground. It's really, really hard to give people motivation when they don't have any.
Yeah, that's true.
It's kind of like you've heard like, you know, some football coaches or whatever, they'll talk about like, oh, what kind of speech did you give, you know, whatever. And they'll say something to the effect of like, I mean, if I got to give you a speech for this game, you know, we've already lost, that sort of thing. That's really, so... so much of motivation is like inward and the things within yourself that like it can be hard for people to bring it out of you. So I don't know. That's brutal. Either one of those is so tough.
But. Well, when you're talking, you know, motivational speakers, I have to think motivational speakers a lot of times make you feel better for a minute, but they don't necessarily change your direction much.
It's
motivational speeches don't. They may fire you up for a moment. They may make you feel better, but they very seldom have a different trajectory.
Yeah, it's like they don't have an a lot of them don't have an application. You know what I'm saying? Like how you apply it.
That's
maybe that's what you were about to say, but like they don't end with, and this is what you need to do. Really just about feeling good when you leave.
Yeah, I was going to say it's a motivational speaker is a little bit like that decision to like get back in the gym. You hit it up a couple of times, and then like once you get back into it for real, like after a week or so, you're like, oh yeah, I remember, this is actually a grind. And, and it's not, you know, and I'm going to have to motivate myself inwardly. Like that speech isn't right there in my ear, you know, all the time, every time. It's not a perfect example, but that's kind of what
the first time you go out, you buy the new stuff, you buy the new shoes, you buy the new workout shorts, all stuff. You're like, and you come home after you feel really sore. You woke up the next day. You're like, yeah, I did that. Mm-hmm. And then like day two soreness sets in and you're like, I'm never doing that again. What a mistake that was.
One of the best spoofs about motivational stuff was on a show that I never watched a lot, but I loved watching this clip. Hans and Franz on Saturday Night Live.
Mm-hmm.
They said, my name is Hans, my name is Franz, and we are here to pump you up. Now, I loved it because I loved their accent, and I'm sorry that I did such a butchered job.
We would play the real clip, but it might get a copyright claim.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
So you're going to have to live. Yeah. You're going to have to live with that interpretation.
Yeah. Interpretation. That's correct. I don't think we're going to have a copyright infringement here anytime soon. Didn't even sound like them, but the words were there, right?
Yeah.
And so I used to think about that a lot of times because sometimes I think preachers think that their job
is to motivate
preacher hat is to motivate people. But it's really not. If the Holy Spirit is not motivating you to do that when you walk out of that room,
mm-hmm.
then I have done very little.
I saw a quote from Tony Evans this week, and I think this would apply for more than what he just said, but he said that people need to stop. We need to stop looking for our purpose and start looking for the one who gives us the purpose.
That's great. That's good stuff.
Like that's heat. But even think about that as motivation, as you know, anything like that. But I was like, man, I mean, that stuck with me. And I don't know if I got it exactly right.
That and take credit for it.
Tony.
Beautiful. And that's so true. Because this idea of helping people change, you know, in Preacher in the Hat, the name of this podcast, preachers, sometimes we think our job is to help people change. And so therefore, part of that is to help motivate them for change.
Yeah.
I've given up on that. I don't do that much anymore. I'm not saying that I don't try to encourage people.
Oh, yeah.
There's a difference between encouraging them and trying to motivate them. But if I am their motivation, I'm going to look up one day and which way did they go?
Yep.
Because they are going to go in all kinds of directions.
Yeah. And we're not built to power that for everybody. No. Because, I mean, we're imperfect. You know, people are imperfect. And so much of that is like, I think a lot of us, I don't know who I'm trying to represent here, but it's so like focused on it's so leader centric hero centric almost.
That's right. Hero centric is the word.
You know, we forget that everyone is infallible, right? Like we all have these flaws.
That's right.
And so like if you look to me every day for motivation, there's gonna be days I'll let you down. Yeah. Period. Oh, yeah. And then that's why you see people like gravitate and not really have any type of, you know, commitment one way or the other, is because, or they say like, oh, I don't go to church anymore because of the Christians. It's like, well, you should have never been going to church for the Christians.
That's correct.
You should have never been, because they're going to fail you.
Yeah, because if they're the motivation for why you're there, that's a different thing. There's a difference between being motivated by somebody being attached to them. You know, some of the brain research they're doing now, and it's coming into the discipleship stuff, is to say that one of the primary things that helps with character transformation and change is attachment. Loving attachments, first with God and with other people. And so I am now motivated by my attachment to my children. I am motivated by my attachment to my grandchildren, to God himself, to my wife. I'm motivated by that attachment.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that I'm motivated to have an attachment. It's that the attachment motivates me in the way I respond to and with loyalty, with compassion, with care, with truth, with correction, with all this, because I am attached to God himself, number one, and then to each other. So I love that we can focus on saying it's not the leader who's going to be the one. And so that cap, the cool thing about this cap, as uncomfortable as it is, it actually demonstrates reality, and it's not all bad. I am their leader, which way did they go? If they are just following me, then when they don't like me anymore, and let's say I'm following Jesus, okay? And so they're following me, all right? But then they primarily sing that they're following me and not the Jesus in me. And so if they see that, then if they don't like me, then they stop following me. Yeah. But sometimes they stop following right. Jesus.
Exactly.
And that is the tragedy
yeah.
of it. The tragedy of it is not just when they stop following me or I don't know exactly where they are or where they are. It's when the tragedy is they're no longer attached to the one that I was trying to talk to them about this whole time.
Hmm.
Yeah.
That's good.
That's spot on.
Derek, give us that Tony Evans quote one more time.
Yeah, I want to hear it.
How should I use it? Like, yeah, the way he said it, the just, purpose. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So yeah. we should stop looking for our purpose and start looking to the one who gives us purpose. Mm-hmm.
That's it.
That right there.
Yeah.
As always, I'm Eric, and for Chris, Derek, Steve, this has been the Preacher in the Hat.